Hey folks, your OS Reviews. You're watching our retro look back slash retro review of the Motorola Devour. This is one of the earliest Android smartphones that Motorola put out on the market, especially with Verizon Wireless back in 2010, so that's almost 6 years ago. And this device was interesting because it had a design language that at the time reminded us more of an Apple product or a MacBook. With the aluminum as well as black accents, it seems like something that Apple would incorporate into their design. And also there was a slide-out physical QWERTY keyboard, which was quite comfortable to type on and overall made for a very durable as well as premium-feeling phone. However, the Devour wasn't a very popular device because the bigger device, the Motorola Droid, had more powerful internals and had a slightly more expensive price tag, but was all in all a better phone, especially compared to the Devour, which had a smaller 3.2-inch display, massive bezels, which made the dimensions overall quite bulky and difficult to tout around compared to other phones at the time. However, the Devour is an interesting device, and that's because it has Motorola's proprietary blur on top of Android OS 2.2, and that's the same thing that we've seen on the Motorola Click back when it was first released. So this is a skin that allows you to put together all of your social media accounts like Facebook, Twitter, and it puts all of those things into this blurred widget system, ecosystem, kind of similar to Blink Feed, but in a manner that we thought was much more obtrusive and not as convenient for folks who didn't want to be constantly bombarded with a lot of new information, a stream of new content every few minutes. So it's something that most people probably turn off after using it for a bit of time. However, it did appeal to social media power users out there, and especially for younger crowds out there. That was probably where Motorola geared this phone to. With that being said, the construction quality and overall utilitarian design language seem to provide a disjoint with that same kind of fun social media centric UI that Motorola did put on the Devour. So it was a bit of a mismatch, and that made the Devour kind of interesting in our books. Otherwise, the phone has decidedly middle-of-the-line specs back in the day, but now it's completely low-end specs that include the Snapdragon S1 processor, which is clocked at roughly 600 megahertz. This is a single-core processor, and RAM, again, was extremely low. You only had very minimal built-in memory. You had to use a micro SD card to take any pictures or to install any apps, which was another low point. It also is a CDMA phone, so there's no global roaming like GSM quad-band devices. Otherwise, the phone has a battery that's rated around 6.4 hours of talk time, which is decent. Of course, being an Android phone, there's GPS, there's Bluetooth, there's Wi-Fi, the standard suite of connectivity options, DLNA, and also an accelerometer for rotating the screen orientation. But that was basically it. A very simple phone with a few extras on board in terms of the software. So taking a closer look at the hardware next, again, that is one of the things that we liked about the Devour. It's very sturdy. It also looks very classy and elegant. Down below here, very interestingly, is a trackpad or an optical trackpad, which allows you to navigate the screen with a bit more of precision, just like on BlackBerry devices, as well as on some other Moto devices that had a trackpad on the back, but this is an optical one on the front. There is a Motorola logo, and there's also some blue accents on the sides, kind of comes back and forth with the design overall, which makes the phone kind of interesting. The Devour is not a... It is a device where you can access the battery if you slide open the door on the side, but it isn't one with a battery door on the back, so it doesn't give the illusion of being a unibody phone, which feels very sturdy because there are no technical moving parts where your fingers and hands touch it, so it creates a very reassuring feel. Down below here is a battery, and you also have access to a micro SD card slot on the side there, so it is hot swappable, which is nice. Otherwise, on the side here, there is a micro USB port for charging and syncing, a loudspeaker on the back, and on the other side, a camera key for taking images, a volume rocker, as well as a quick launch shortcut key. The top features a power on-off switch, as well as a 3.5mm jack, which is exactly centered, and the back features a 3.0-megapixel fixed-focus camera with no autofocus, no LED flash, and no vanity mirror, and again, the aluminum and rubber construction, which feels extremely sturdy and rugged. Sliding things open, we have a spring-loaded keyboard, which has a full four rows. However, we weren't fans of the fact Motorola decided to put a dedicated number row on the very top at the expense of putting the spacebar on the same row as the V and B letters, which makes the typing a little bit strange, and you have to get used to it by typing on this thing for a few days before the format kind of kicks in. But overall, the keys themselves are quite tactile, responsive, and risen above the surface. Definitely better than the Motorola Droid at the time, which was completely flush. With that being said, the travel still could be a bit better. They seem a little bit shallow in terms of the clickiness action, not as good as Motorola Click, but overall still a very good keyboard at the time, and the back kind of features that black accent, which continues with the design language. So otherwise, the phone itself has three capacitive controls on the front, which are backlit, and on the side there is also an LED indicator, which will glow and flash white whenever you have a new message that comes in, or perhaps power status updates, like your battery is getting low, and so on and so forth. So the design itself is quite compelling, although the screen itself really should have been larger and not so small. There really was no reason for it to be so small, and Devour all in all does remind us a bit of a Sidekick phone in terms of the sliding keyboard action and the overall playful UI that Motorola was going for at the time. So taking a closer look now at the user interface, again, it's completely outdated by today's standards. There are still a few accents of things you might see for modern Android. All right, so launching into the user interface next, you can see the display does a decent job of showing off some colors, and it still remains fairly visible even under bright sunlight, and viewing angles are acceptable, but again, it's not the sharpest display in the world, which is to be expected with the rather low pixel density and the resolution on here. But we still have access to that drag down notification drawer with the time, date information, as well as wireless options and connectivity on the very top right hand corner. There is still that analog widget, which was something that was a symbol for Android back in the day, and you can tap and hold here to add more widgets, as well as multi-blur widgets, which were customized by Motorola, wallpapers and change of folders, and so on and so forth. And things are still pretty responsive as far as navigating through the interface is concerned, but if you open up a lot of apps, and especially if you browse the web and go to a complex modern-day site, it will considerably slow things down. And taking a quick look here, we have access to quite a lot of bloatware, which was one of the main reasons why Moto Blur wasn't our favorite skin on top of Android even back in the day. That's because there's a lot of things going on, like there's the Moto Blur accounts, which you had to create before you could access the phone, so that was something a bit of a hassle. You also needed things in addition to a Moto Blur account, you needed things like a Google account, so you had to create two sets of accounts. But a nice feature of Moto Blur was after you created it, there was also a software suite on a computer where you could manage things, and in the case that you lost your phone, you could actually wipe your phone's data directly on your computer, which was actually pretty cool. Otherwise, we have the WebKit-based browser, which is now extremely out of date, as you would expect. It takes you still to the Verizon page, it looks like, but even over Wi-Fi, you can see how things are quite slow to load. It will take quite a bit of time. The optical trackpad on the side, though, does allow you to slide up and down quite easily. And you can still see how mobile sites will work on here. You can read some news articles, but complex sites like New York Times will take significantly longer to load. But basic things will still work. Otherwise, you have access to a basic camera. Let's take a look at that next. You need an SD card to take any shots, and the field of view is quite narrow and zoomed in. It's not a very wide lens at all, but there are a few other settings that you can play around with if you want to do that, like changing the effects, changing the white balance, the exposure, and recording video at VGA resolution, but that is something that you can do in emergency situations. Some final apps that are pre-included on here, there is a YouTube client built in that still does work for some videos, not for full HD videos. There is some Verizon specific applications such as VZ Navigator that's built on here. Google Talk is on here, VCast music support. There's a Motorola phone portal I was talking about, a basic music player that's been customized by Motorola, Google Maps, Google Market, which has no longer real support for modern day apps, but it still works for very old apps. There is some basic things like City ID packs, which allows you to change the theme of your phone, messaging clients, various things. Again, there's a lot of doubling up with the apps, so there are probably like three or four apps that do the same thing but are by different designers, so that's kind of a bit confusing at the time. Anyways, this has been the Motorola Devour, a pretty interesting device. Obviously, no longer a very usable phone here in 2016, especially with some of the software glitches and, of course, the extremely outdated processor and hardware underneath the hood. But the design and overall fit and finish of the phone were top-notch at the time, and the interesting kind of juxtaposition with this extremely durable and sleek appearance with the rather jubilant UI that had the emphasis on connecting to various social media platforms seemed to be a mismatch and perhaps is one of the reasons why the Devour didn't do so great. Of course, now Motorola is finding success, at least the Google branch or the Lenovo branch now, creating stock devices like the Motorola E and G, which are a bit more streamlined. They don't have as much bloatware, and I think that Motorola learned a lesson with the original Android devices like the Motorola Blur. Anyways, this has been an interesting video look back. Thanks for watching. Here are OS reviews. This has been the Motorola Devour for Verizon Wireless.